Thanks for tuning into Mysteries of the Mind, a podcast revealing the way our unconscious minds shape our lives. And now, here's your host, Dr. Michael Bader.
Today, I want to talk about the concept of survivor guilt, a powerful concept that I think is insufficiently appreciated in psychology today. And I believe that if we understand survivor guilt, we can understand a wide range of psychological phenomena. In fact, I'd go further and argue that some form of survivor guilt lies at the heart of the psychological suffering of most of my patients and many of the patients in psychotherapy today. Survivor guilt is the guilt one feels at having survived or even thrived when others have not. It was originally noted among Jewish survivors of concentration camps and is often seen among survivors of other catastrophic events like natural disasters, military combat, or the AIDS epidemic. In these very dramatic situations, the guilt that survivors feel is often quite conscious and very extreme. For example, survivors might feel responsible for not saving others, or for saving themselves while others suffered or died around them. It's often marked by feelings of fraudulence, of being an imposter, all stemming from the belief that there was some mistake, something wrong with having survived a bad situation in which others suffered. Movies have been made that feature survivor guilt, such as Sophie's Choice and Ordinary People, as well as television shows like Rescue Me, in which a New York City firefighter, Tommy Gavin, who survived 9/11, is visited by the ghosts of those fellow firefighters who did not. Survivor guilt is commonly seen in cases of PTSD, especially among veterans who suffer from painful memories of having survived combat that maimed or killed friends and colleagues. Survivor guilt, however, does not have to be limited to extreme situations in which one's physical survival is the imagined crime. In fact, most often, survivor guilt is not even conscious and only becomes apparent when investigated and uncovered in psychotherapy. In these cases, one uncovers the painful and guilty belief that the very fact of one's success in life came or comes at the expense of the welfare of loved ones. In other words, the underlying belief here is that enjoying the good things in life, things like independence, financial or professional success, success in love, trusting friendships, sexual pleasure, that all these things were acquired at the expense of others. Being happy itself is the crime, not survival. For example, children of depressed or unhappy parents often grow up with the unspoken sense that they shouldn't be happier or more successful than their parents. This is a prime example of survivor guilt. The belief involves a feeling, however irrational it might be, that these successes in life are equivalent to betrayals, or even that these successes are the causes of parents' failures. Such children live in a kind of zero-sum world in which the more happiness they acquire, the less they believe their loved ones can enjoy. They grow up with a subliminal conviction that they're not supposed to be happy or successful because such good things feel like, well, they're like symbolic abandonments of their roots or of their families or of their communities of origin. Their unconscious logic tells them that escaping a sinking ship is a crime. Now, sometimes, of course, parents explicitly guilt trip their children in just this way, begrudging their successes and complaining about their children's lack of attention or help. The stereotype of the long-suffering Jewish mother is sort of suggestive of this dynamic. The old joke goes, "Why don't Jewish mothers drink?" Answer, alcohol interferes with their suffering. A parent's suffering, in other words, is used as a club to attack a child's success. And most of us, I think, have either directly experienced such a dynamic or we've seen it up close. Other times, children acquire survivor guilt-based beliefs all on their own, inferring that they're supposed to share in the problems they see in their families, that such problems are just the coin of the realm. They're simply the way life is supposed to be, and therefore, that achieving more is disloyal and unacceptable. If there's a lot of suffering in your family growing up, that becomes the family norm, the family culture, and being happy and successful represents a breach, a violation of these norms, almost a betrayal. Examples of this dynamic also abound in the public world. For example, we've all seen and heard the stories of athletes or entertainers who grew up in dire circumstances, who then make a success of themselves, but who then manage to sabotage that success, you know, by using drugs or getting themselves into financial or relationship trouble. See, when someone shoots themselves in the foot in this way, the unconscious intention behind it is to actually alleviate or lessen guilt. Success is the crime, and failure is the punishment. Self-punishment, then, can be seen as the result of subliminal efforts to actually get rid of or deal with survivor guilt. What the person is doing is symbolically sharing the failures or disappointments of loved ones towards whom he or she feels guilty. The unconscious logic goes like this. If everybody's in the same boat, then no one's betrayed, no one's left out, or feels left behind. People with survivor guilt might drop out of school one semester short of graduation, or take the example of someone growing up in a family with parents who had a very unhappy marriage. Children in this situation will often feel unconsciously guilty about having a happier marriage than their parents did. As a result, they'll either choose a bad partner or screw up the relationship with a good one, all in order not to outdo or reject or leave behind the unhappy parental relationships they saw growing up. That's survivor guilt. Now, people do succeed in spite of their survivor guilt. These are people that don't sabotage themselves that much. But these people will often secretly believe that in their success that there's some place they don't belong. And the result is they feel like a fraud or an imposter as a result. This is how survivor guilt can work. You know, I've worked with many leaders, for example, successful people in positions of authority who are plagued with the vague but painful sense that they don't belong in the position they find themselves. The experience of fraudulence is almost always a result of survivor guilt. Such leaders invariably manage to undermine themselves somehow out of obedience to and compliance with this guilt. Many forms of psychological suffering and inhibition stem from attempts to retreat from good things in order not to surpass, leave behind, or otherwise outdo one's family and community of origin. So, for instance, I've treated many women who were the daughters of unhappy, anxious mothers, and who then grow up having difficulty themselves feeling relaxed and successful. Again, all of this is due to survivor guilt. Such attempts to run away from success because of survivor guilt, when they're deeply understood, actually can yield a greater acceptance of one's authentic accomplishments and healthy satisfactions. As the spiritual teacher and author Marianne Williamson put it, she said this, quote, "Our deepest fear is not that we're inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we're powerful beyond measure. It's our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. We ask ourselves, well, who am I to be brilliant and talented and gorgeous? Actually, who are you not to be? Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We are all meant to shine as children do." And I couldn't agree more.
Thanks for listening to Mysteries of the Mind podcast. To learn more about how your unconscious mind really works, please tune in next time and be sure to visit Dr. Bader's website at michaelbader.com.